Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
Hey, John, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for this week's show.
Oh, my God, this is a show.
This is a huge show for us.
Sweeps week.
Sweeps week. It's the season finale of SNL of season 44. This was episode 21 of the season, I believe. So we got back SNL favorite Paul Rudd. With musical guest DJ Khaled.
Yes, he's the best.
And
he says.
And DJ Khaled brought tons of people with him.
He brought like a caravan of folks.
And so in that tradition, we decided to bring somebody along with us.
That's right. We have a caravan of our folk.
So we're very proud to welcome our very first in studio guest, Mr. John Murray from the SNL After Party podcast.
Hey, Mr. Murray, how's it going?
Yay! Going pretty good. I could use a nap, but we're going to get through it.
You have had some eventful few days.
Yeah, it's been a busy one.
So we know that people are listening to this episode who maybe have listened to Darren and my podcast,
right?
Or we're actually doing this as a crossover.
That's
it's
right.
Going to be
exactly.
Airing on both of our podcasts.
That's right.
So we have some of John's listeners and we have some of our listeners. So we're going to introduce our shows to each other.
It's a crossover event of the season.
It's like those old comic books where the Justice League would meet the Justice Society from Earth 2.
Yeah, like the Flintstones and the Jetsons.
Exactly.
Remember that?
It's exciting.
So this is the part of your podcast where we just go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I was waiting for that.
Pretty much every part of our podcast is the part where we go off on a tangent.
Yeah, I was just amazed that we jumped in that quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we don't mess around.
Yeah, I mean, show prep. Who needs that?
Show prep, schmo prep.
So John, tell us a little about, you're obviously an SNL super fan, so tell us about how you discovered Saturday Night Live, when you first started watching the show.
And who are some of your favorite cast members?
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
You don't have to do top five, just like off the top of your head.
All right, so first question, when did I start watching SNL? Sometime around 1992, it would have been when Wayne's World was the talk of the playground. I was always a bit of a comedy nerd. Like, I loved Ghostbusters. That came around at the right time for me. So I kind of knew who the people were that kind of were coming out at SNL and Second City. And, like, that was already kind of my jam. And it just, when I was around 11, that's when the 11:30 start time of SNL became tenable for me to be able to stay up and watch it. So it was sometime around then. I've been watching it pretty steady ever since, you know, maybe a brief hiatus when I was a teenager and, you know, there were girls, but other than the one small time in my life when I actually had a social life, I've been pretty good.
Oh, far out.
When did you decide to actually start an SNL podcast? How long have you been going now?
Just finished our third season. Yeah, we started working on it in 2016, right before the election.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah. Ooh. We thought that was the time to jump in.
It's
time for something.
Mm-hmm. So, maybe Darren and I, we should talk a little about our SNL origin stories.
Let's talk about
this a little in our first episode, but maybe we need a refresher.
For those that don't know, John and I were two comedians who live in New Jersey, the beautiful Garden State, and we're both comedy nerds and both big fans of Saturday Night Live. John and I have known each other for a while, and I think
about 5 years.
About 5 years? Has it been 5 years?
I think so, yeah.
Good Lord.
I think that came up on my Facebook feed recently.
Great. But yeah, so a couple years ago, you know, of course, I was watching Saturday Night Live as I do, and I have my laptop open as I often do, and then John was doing the same, unbeknownst to me, and then
I started just basically live. It's not really live tweeting when you do it on Facebook, but I was live
Facebook
commentary on the show on my Facebook page, and then Darren was joining in every week, and it got to the point I started tagging him.
Yeah,
in the show.
You met online, and it blossomed into so much more.
We didn't meet online. We met in life, but but it blossomed online.
Sure. And then it became just our thing, where it's like, oh, you're gonna be home in time to watch Saturday Night Live and comment? Like,
yeah.
It got
to the point I would tag you in the descriptions.
Yeah, and I'd be out at a party, and it's like, it's 11:30, I gotta get home.
Yeah, you'd bust in like the Kool-Aid man halfway through the show.
Yes, I just drove in through to my apartment, didn't even bother to park the car.
And then we eventually started talking with our friend Frank Blowey, our producer, from the Non-Productive Network, non-productive.com, people.
Yes.
And he was like, "Yeah, this could be a podcast. You could do this."
Yeah,
and
here we are.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we talked a little about it, and we decided to start it up on the next season. So
now that you've got a season under your belts, what do you think? Like,
Oh, it's horrible. This has been a living hell.
It's the worst decision I've ever made in my life.
God, I hate this man so much.
I wake up screaming at night and covered in sweat.
Yeah, okay. But it's been great.
Okay. Other than that,
wonderful.
Homicidal rage aside, yeah, it's been fantastic.
Yeah.
So what about you? You have an interesting format for SNL After Party. You like us, you talk about the show every week, you go through it sketch by sketch.
That is all true.
I believe last week on the podcast I said it's like our show, but more structured.
Yeah, you're more structured. You're more like a little bit more.
It's a rigid format.
Yes, rigid. Yes. I don't want to say rigid. That's a word.
No, and intentionally so.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great podcasts where digression and just shooting the breeze and keeping it casual that yields fantastic results.
That's us.
I thought I just wanted something a little bit more. I don't know, like a traditional show where you're moving quick through the topics.
I admire the efficiency of your podcast because you always boil each sketch down to just like a sentence.
Yeah, it takes a lot of editing to sound like we actually know what we're
talking
about.
Yeah, that's like succinct. Our first sketch, such and so does this thing. What did you think of this sketch? And wow. Whereas Darren and I...
Is that how I come across?
Yeah. But very professional.
Yeah,
like a newscaster.
I mean this in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean in a good way. This is not in any sense of the word a criticism.
No, it's just rare that someone does an impression of me in my presence. And I don't know if I was flattered, but anyways.
Yeah, that was very good. It was like two John Murrays in a room.
That's
like,
right.
Who's the real John Murray here?
So John, I guess, is my counterpart from the other podcast.
Oh, you're doppelganger.
The, yeah.
That's true.
But
tonight I am just riding shotgun. You're leading the show tonight.
But absolutely. Yeah, well, and thank you for ceding control of your show to us for 1 week.
Happily so.
But you also have you have like your regular partner that you do the podcast with.
Steve, he's my like standby. He's always ready
to
go. But occasionally we bring in other people.
And then you also have Mike and Mario, right?
Right. They do the month in review.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're big Survivor guys, but also SNL nerds in their own right. So
uh-huh.
They were doing the big rival podcast that it was my intention to crush when I started mine.
Mm-hmm. And now you've absorbed them.
Yeah, eventually we realized that it's better to go Avenger style and just pool our might than to do square off against each
other. That's interesting. And where are you guys located? Are you regionally close to each other?
No. So I'm located in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, which is effectively a suburb of Detroit, Michigan.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
We share the Detroit River. We're
over the border.
Yeah. I can open up my front door and look at Detroit.
That's how close
we are.
That's the dream.
That's a beautiful view.
Yeah, Steve, my main guy, he's in Newfoundland. And if any of you guys have any sense of Canadian geography, that's...
We're Americans. We do not.
Yes.
It's all snow up there as far as we know.
It's
all snow and kids in a hole.
We'll call it your Boston. Like, it's our Boston.
So you're a ways apart. So you're always recording the show remotely together. Like,
yep, we do
over
it over
phone
Skype.
Line?
Yeah, Skype.
Oh, nice. Okay. Wow.
Okay.
It's nice to be in house though. This is a bit more I don't know, you just can interact a little bit better when you can see the person and
absolutely.
Get a sense of their timing, their rhythm. So
yeah.
This is nice. This is way better.
I like looking into somebody's eyes when we're broadcasting together.
It sets a better mood.
If for no other reason, then you know more or less when the person is done talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
That definitely helps. And another big thing that we're constantly trying to edit out is you don't get that sense when there's a bit of a delay, like a phone delay in your recording.
Sure.
It just throws off the rhythm. So this is nice. This is nice.
This is podcast talk.
The non-productive studios, they are more opulent and upscale than I was expecting.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, we have a doorman. We're like on the 28th floor. Or something. It's a beautiful...
Right. We have valet parking in the front.
My God, it's a pool.
Yeah.
You got a pool just to have it.
We have people fanning us throughout the show.
Yes, feeding us grapes.
Yes.
It's just...
we spare no expense.
Yeah, and none of this is accessible to your guests. This is purely for you guys.
Not at all. You bastard.
You stay in the peasant's quarters where you belong.
But you had a very interesting couple weeks. You've made a trip down here to the Northwest. We, by the way, for those who don't know, we record our podcast in Clifton, New Jersey, which is about an hour or so outside of the city,
A little less.
So, we're not far from Manhattan. Yeah. But you have done something that neither one of us has done yet.
Hey, you guys need to man up. You're going to do an SNL podcast.
Whoa,
I know.
You're calling us out, bro?
Wow. Yeah,
I'm thrown down.
You calling me out, bro?
If I can find my way in to New York and do the standby line and you guys are all of an hour outside of town,
there is
no excuse.
Well, we take it for granted. I mean, it's the usual, the native conundrum. You make more of an effort to do something when you're a tourist, as
absolutely,
it were.
Absolutely.
So, but so you actually went to see the show, or you went to see the dress rehearsal, and then you got to watch the show from the dressing room or the green room.
Yeah. You saw the show twice, too. Like, yeah, not so once, but twice.
I came up a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I went in, I did the standby line for the Emma Thompson show.
Nice. Mm.
So if anyone doesn't understand the standby line, basically what you're doing is you're lining up to hopefully get a seat that someone who had a ticket didn't show up for. That's mm-hmm. what you're doing.
Okay.
So it's a gamble, and you need to sleep on the street to be able to really secure your spot.
Right. Now, was this the first time you've done this, or have you done this in the past?
No, the first time I did it was back in 2016, the Fred Armisen finale. I figured if I'm going to do an SNL podcast, I'd better go do the standby line before I even start, so I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, you were there for the Armisen finale?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, that was a great episode, too. That was Farewell, Mr. Bunting.
I love that
to
one.
To see that drop in the house, that sure. was pure pandemonium. I've never sure. seen anything quite so raucous.
Oh, wow.
So that was my first SNL experience.
Nice.
And then I've just been doing it every year because you got to, I don't know, just kind of keep up your skills, so to speak. Like, I want to
sharpen your sword.
Yeah, watch the production and just keep immersing myself in kind of mm-hmm. how the mechanics of the show work, because it helps inform, you know, the discussion.
Okay, that's very good. Very cool. So you watch both the Emma Thompson episode and the Paul Rudd episode.
Right.
And I know the dress rehearsals, they run a lot longer than the live show, because there are a number of sketches that they cut between dress and air.
Yeah, the dress rehearsal is absolutely everything they can produce in the week. Mm-hmm. That's the full scripts as they exist during blocking. Extra sketches, like you said, more weekend update jokes, longer monologues. Then they take that, and then they've got an hour and a half from when the dress rehearsal ends to when the live show starts. They start paring it all down. So what mm-hmm. you see on TV, not only do they cut sketches, but they also trim the fat out of the sketches that they keep. They look at what played, what got a laugh, what didn't, and then they try to rejigger them for maximum impact. So the same sketches that are performed that make it to air, mm-hmm. Sometimes they're vastly different in their structure if they see that there's a problem that they think they can work out before it goes live.
So that's got to be fascinating. You just get to see
endlessly
how the sketches evolve.
Yeah. You get in the head of the writers and you see, okay, I understand why you decided to trim that out.
That's a comedy nerd's dream.
It is. Yeah. It's a masterclass in many ways to be able to have the insight between the two shows.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got to make a point of doing this next season.
We got to field trip.
You know what? Screw it. Not next season. Next week. Next week, we're next going week to 30 Rock.
We're leaving right now. Up in the standby line next week.
We'll that's right. That's right.
We're going to leave right now.
Yes.
Just turn this off. Turn all this off.
So that's that is so cool.
Yeah.
Wow. And so how much of a difference is it from seeing it like on, you know, in person than it is from watching on TV? Because I mean, we only seen it on TV and we could see like from our viewpoint, like we see some sketches like that wasn't great, but like how does it play differently when you see it live? Is it more the energy up?
It does. Like there's a lot of different aspects to how it plays in the house.
Mm-hmm.
The first big thing is, not everyone in the audience can actually even see a sketch that's
being
performed in the house, just because of the nature of the way the studio is laid out and where they have to fit their sets for the various sketches.
Mm-hmm.
So they're strewn throughout the studio. So some people on the far side may not even like be able to see over the side wall of a set. So
So you're very reliant on the monitors.
Sometimes, it depends on where you're sitting and which sketch it is. But what people don't understand is when you go to see Saturday Night Live, you are not going to a Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
It is not laid out for you to be able to absorb it like a polished production, like you would an actual Broadway show with one stage and everyone's lined up to be able to see you at the stage.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically, you're the peanut gallery and you're watching a production unfold.
Right.
You're there basically to see how they build the show, how they execute the show, how they move the equipment around, how they stage everything. You're there to absorb the space and the mechanics of it. So if people take it on those terms, it's always endlessly fascinating. But there's a lot of people that get into the show and they're like, "Well, wait a minute, what's going on? I'm kind of off kitty corner here, and I can't see Kate McKinnon in the sketch. I'm going to wig out.
Wig out
as you do when you don't see Kate McKinnon in a sketch.
But there's a lot of people that go to the show not maybe because they're super big SNL fans, it's because maybe it's the host, it's the musical guest, or one of the players that they obsess over.
Yeah, I want to see BTS.
So a BTS fan gets in there at the far side of the studio, they can't even see the musical stage.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Which is, you know,
right next to home base.
Yeah, but on the far side. So, mm-hmm. you know, you might not even be able to peek in because it only faces outward. So, half the audience is going to be really disappointed because they're not a camera. They're not getting the perfect view of what's unfolding. So they do have monitors to help with that. But for me, at least, I'd rather be watching what's happening rather than just seeing going out on air. It's great for someone like me or, you know, like you guys, like nerds that would appreciate just all the moving pieces that have to be arranged just like a ballet on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for anyone that's going in expecting a Broadway experience, that's just not what you're
right,
you're
right.
To see.
And I years and years ago, I went on the NBC tour right. at 30 Rockefeller Center, yeah. And so I've been in Studio 8H. I haven't been to an SNL taping, but the studio is much smaller than you yes. would expect.
Yeah,
I mean it is. They are pressed for space in
really?
That studio.
Absolutely, yeah.
Huh. I mean, because it wasn't originally built as like a radio studio.
Yeah, for the symphony.
It yeah,
was, it's a big cement box. It's actually elevated a bit. Like they've got some dampening with some springs or something that the mm-hmm. whole thing is on because the vibrations that the symphony would make in there. So it's a very unique space, mm-hmm. but it's a long rectangle. It's not
right.
It's not like a. It's not like the
very
tight
long
show.
And narrow.
You don't have like big deep bleachers that go from the ground all the way up in like 50 rows or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have a very thin balcony that kind of traverses the whole length of it.
Right,
and then you just got what you see on screen, which is like 20, 30 people that are in, moving chairs on the floor.
And another fun thing is you must have seen them remaking the stage for all yeah. the various sketches. You've seen them put the sets up and yeah. down. And
the best thing about going to a live taping is the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sketches are great too. Like it's cool to see like, oh man, that's just a piece of plywood that, they do such a masterful job with the sets. Like there's so much to take in, but mm-hmm. the commercial breaks when the second, the on-air light fades, everyone starts scurrying. They all know what their next job is. Cameras mm-hmm. and cranes and everything are being moved in position and, boom operators and all the rest of it. So it's just, it really is like, I can only describe it as a ballet. It's like,
right.
it's this controlled chaos that in the span of a 2 or 3 minute commercial break basically rebuilds the studio for the next 10 minutes of the show.
That's yeah. amazing.
It's like a well-oiled machine.
I totally respect the competency of everyone that they've hired.
It's a live show. Everybody's got to be working at the top of their game.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's really incredible to think about. Now, okay, you saw a lot of crew people.
Yes.
Oh,
a thing on our show.
I was just about to say this.
A quest that we have developed over right. the course of season 44.
Yeah, and I know where you're going
is a particular crew member
yep.
that I happened to spot during one show. I don't even remember what episode it was anymore.
Mohawk McBeardy. Yeah,
yes.
You call him Mohawk McBeardy.
Sure, why not?
We call him Mohawk Man. Just
yeah, but he has a glorious beard as well.
He wow. does. He
the,
does.
The man just understands yeah. male grooming.
I originally referred to him as Mohawk stagehand, okay. but then I heard from
he is not a stagehand.
A friend of a friend oh. that he is, he was likely a director or something like
well, no,
somewhere higher up in the food chain.
I believe he's Kate McKinnon's floor finisher. Now, that's not the technical name of his position at the show. It'd be
right.
Whatever.
So he's the guy who comes in last minute on and makes sure Kate McKinnon looks correct.
I believe he's basically Kate McKinnon's quality control. He's the one that's given her like her bottle of fizzy water during the commercial breaks or something.
Nice.
Like he's basically there preening her and making sure she's ready.
That seems like a good gig.
Interesting.
You get to follow Kate McKinnon around for a couple hours.
Yeah.
Now don't
in a non-creepy way.
Don't quote me on that because that's just through observation. Like
right.
seeing what he's actually doing on the floor, but I don't know his exact title.
But he seemed to be concentrated on Kate.
Yeah, he seemed to be doting exclusively on Kate.
Okay, I like this. We are finding out more information.
Well, I can just tell you who he is.
Oh, what? You can?
You guys don't actually know who he is?
This is going to be like...
this is like when,
do I want to know? This is like...
I feel like we this is like...
Do you want the mystery to end, or do you want to keep this going for another season?
You have a proper name for Mohawk Man.
I do. Now, I mean, like, I don't know if he wants this being broadcast out to the world, your millions of
okay.
Oh, there's like Capone's vault over here.
So
yeah,
I mean,
so maybe you should just like tell us the name off air, and we could just put in a bleep or something.
Now, will you actually put it? Like,
no.
The first name is fine,
mm-hmm.
but let's at least make the listeners maybe dig through the credits or something to paste it. All
okay, together. I'll give you a first name. Yeah, we don't want to invade his privacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just think he looks really cool.
Yeah.
And we want to know more about him.
Sure.
I mean, because he's a dude with a mohawk. He's got to have stories to tell.
He's awesome.
Yeah,
he's got to be awesome.
Did you get to meet him or talk to him?
No, but I'm aware of him.
Okay,
and who he is.
All right,
but no.
All right,
I saw him at the after party, but I didn't actually interact with him. I should have gone up to him and said, "Did you realize you're internet famous? There's these two weirdos out in New Jersey that are really
they are obsessed with you." Well, I mean, if we're gonna get his name, I feel like we should have a little fanfare, like do a little drum roll,
like a drum roll. All right, here we go.
So, so the name of Mohawk Man is.
Awesome Joey.
Awesome Joey.
That is not disappointing in the least.
Good.
Awesome Joey.
Well, no, I mean, I added the awesome.
Oh, okay.
But you can work with Joey and maybe figure it out.
I love the idea that he's known as Awesome Joey around the set, though.
No, I've built a
whole... No, that's his new nickname now.
Yeah, awesome Joey. My headcanon says he's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I feel it's warranted without having ever spoken to the guy.
I mean, you got a mohawk, you're working with Kate McKinnon, you're getting her water and stuff.
But
I mean, people on podcasts are talking about you.
Yeah.
No, he's doing something right.
That's wow.
There you go. You got a first name.
All right. This is
run with it. If you can figure it out from there, all the better.
This is more than I was expecting.
This
is what you want on a season finale.
We told you this is a special sweeps week.
Oh my god.
Joey Mohawk, my god.
This is incredible.
There you go.
This is Joey Mohawk.
Joey Mohawk thickens. You are laser focusing in on the goal here. You're
Mohawk man is Joey Mohawk.
My God. This summer just got off to a great start.
Wow. you have made our day. We could end this podcast right now.
We're not even going to talk about the episode. We're done.
Yeah. Who
3 hours on a train to get out here. Let's just call it. I'll just head out.
Sure. Just throw my notes in the trash.
So you got to watch the dress rehearsal, but you also got to watch the live show. Can you talk about that a bit and how that happened?
Then the after party we got to talk about.
Yeah. So you actually, as per the name of your podcast, you went to an SNL after party. You went to two.
My long laid plans of starting a podcast with the sole intention of getting to the after party has been realized.
By the way, this is a total digression, as we do here on the SNL Nerds. Have you seen the Twitter account of the person who was tweeting an avocado at SNL every day until he got free tickets?
No.
I don't know if it's still there.
Did it work?
I don't know. Now that I think of it, I don't think I've seen this account in a while.
That seems like the sort of thing that NBC would not touch in a million years, because then you're just asking for everyone to be pounded.
Yeah.
That's true. I see how that could open up.
Yeah, you set a dangerous precedent when you let crazies annoy their way
into the show. It was so wonderfully bizarre, I just had to follow him.
Well, I hope he sees all the success in the world. If he got tickets out of it, more power to him.
I wish him the best.
I am rooting for him. I have no idea who's behind that account, but damn it, I am rooting for that man.
God love him.
Or a woman, you know.
Yeah, or
because women can tweet avocados at SNL, too. We're liberated.
Totally equal opportunity.
That's right. It's 2019.
But so you watch the live show.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Okay. So a couple weeks ago, I got an incredibly cool surprise from a supporter of our podcast and a supporter of your podcast, actually, as well. He is an SNL super fan nerd in his own right. And he is bona fide. Trust me, I've vetted him.
Yes.
It's not just because of the connection to the show. He is an SNL guy.
Yeah, we've actually mentioned his name on the podcast.
Yeah, and
before,
I'm about to.
He's, okay, okay.
He did me a solid. I'm going to give him every shout out.
All right.
I can possibly muster. So Justin Gardner, the brother of Heidi Gardner,
Who we are fans of.
Yes,
hey Justin,
totally stand up dude.
Hey Justin. Hey Heidi. If you're listening, we don't think you are, but just in case.
As an incredibly supportive brother and SNL fan, he likes to come out to the show, and this last time that he was planning on coming in for the finale, turns out his lady friend wasn't going to be able to join him, and so gears started turning, and he thought, well, we could probably put this plus one to good use. So he gets in touch with Heidi and says, can we vet this guy? Like, can we get him cleared? Is that even, you know, something that I could, that we could even, like, try and sort out?
I see.
And yeah, so she asked, she got me cleared, and so I went as his plus one. And we got to go in backstage, you know, behind the studio, not like on the floor in the seats. What we did is we went to Heidi's dressing room. We watched on the monitors there.
That is so cool.
She's kind of, her and Ego share a room, so they're kind of, you know, hovering around in and out and kind of doing the show.
Right.
But for the sections of the show where they don't have anything to do, they can come back and mingle.
Cool. Now we talked about this a little before we started recording. Calling it a dressing room is a bit of a misnomer, because they don't actually change in their dressing rooms, typically.
Well, not during the live show when they might have guests in there.
Because
the way the show works is they do all of the changes on the floor or discreetly in and around the studio space, because they got to do quick changes. They don't have time to be running through hallways to their change room.
Right.
They need to have assistants on hand that can do a quick dress change with them, you know, as efficiently as possible. So it has to be as close to the studio as they can be. So that's why the dressing rooms are more of a sitting room. And that's why if you're going to bring a guest to the show, it's the best place to dump them.
Right.
So it's not what you'd think, like a, like a powder room, like with all the makeup spread out, because they have a department that does all of that stuff.
Of course.
It's not that traditional idea of a dressing room.
Big mirror with like big light bulbs all around
exactly.
it.
So yeah, it's more like a green room where you just wait to go on the show.
Yeah, it had benches and seats and stuff, so it can accommodate a lot more people than a room that small should be able to. We were there with Ego's guest and Heidi's guest for them.
Oh, all right.
Very nice.
Awesome. That's so when you were backstage, did you see any showgirls with Abraham Lincoln and the llama?
I so wanted to. Yeah, if for whatever reason they'd been there that night, that would have been the ultimate.
That's the dream.
But no, Abe Lincoln, the dancing girls and the llama were not in attendance.
Oh, that's
son
a shame.
Of a,
but they must have been just out of sight.
Sure. I at least got to walk that infamous hallway, you know.
With all the pictures of the past hosts?
Well, they have that everywhere. Like on the ninth floor when you go in, like where the people go for the balcony, there's a hallway with pictures. And then downstairs, they have all the staff or like all the cast from and hosts from the entire run of the show on the walls there. So yes, everything like the hallways that you see in promos and stuff like that, that is kind of like the SNL backstage aesthetic. They've got that anywhere that people are going to be walking, they try and make it look a little classier with the black and white photos.
Oh, of course.
Nice.
So yeah, being back there was cool, but yeah, no llama.
I guess the shows are. I guess just watching shows cooler. Right?
Yeah. I mean, there was a few other highlights for the night. So I mean, I'm okay with not getting the llama this time. Next time, if he's not there, I'm just.
Someday. What's the point of this?
Someday. That's the show. Is there anything else to tell us more about the show or the taping process?
Well, we could dig in as deep as you guys want, but I don't know how much our audience wants to get into the nitty gritty.
Of
all that stuff.
Well, you also went to the after party.
Yeah. So what
was that like?
Where was it?
Okay. So typically, they all just shuttle off in Lincoln Town cars and go to a restaurant that they've kind of, you know, secured for the year.
Is it the same restaurant or do they vary?
No, they have a few different ones. There's a few spots around town that I know they've had them in the past and they just kind of, you know, I don't know. I think they just, that's a sort of a last minute decision. I don't think that there's any great, you know, planning or scheduling to it. I think
makes sense.
Whoever at the show is responsible for that just picks it, calls them, gets it booked, and
I bet there's an email chain.
Yeah.
I bet they're like any office, and it's like because in my office there's a Skype conversation. It's like, oh, where are we going to order lunch today?
Yeah, there's a group text chat or whatever.
Yeah.
So the people in the know where to go, and hopefully all the riffraff know. That's the idea. But
were some of the riffraff.
Yes. Well, there was some of the riffraff that just happened to have the right wristband.
Right.
For the finale though, they don't do that. What they do, what they've at least been doing for the last several years is they clear out the ice rink at Rockefeller Plaza.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah. Nice.
So it's at the concourse level. There's like a restaurant that buttresses one end of it. Mm-hmm. So they just open it all up. And it's normally kind of a pavilion where people eat during the off season too. So
right.
It's already kind of set up for that.
Yeah. It's a New York landmark.
There you go. Yeah. But they change it up and redress it for the finale, and they have a swanky party in there.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And they don't have to go very far. You just go down to
second
level.
Yeah. So if you're in for the show, then they know how to kind of crowd control you down through the basement and get you into the party. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, now did you get to meet any other or many other cast members?
Did you hobnob?
Did you mingle?
Yeah, I mingled and hobnob. But the thing there's a couple of things at least about the finale party because it's so big, it's not intimate. They've got a loud DJ, the music's blaring. If you want to talk to someone, you're going to be right up to their face and you're going to be basically shouting at each other. Like it's not there for conversation. It's an event. And a lot of the people there, they have no business with the cast, so it's not like the cast is going to like go out of their way to like, let's go over here to the corner and have a big long conversation. They're just doing like meet and greets and just trying to, you know, give everyone a couple minutes. But what you're doing is small talk or just congratulating them or whatever.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
I'm not important enough that anyone's really making time for me, but you can just simply go up to them and just say, hey, you're doing great work.
No one was like, John Murray from SNL After Party Podcast?
Surprisingly, a couple people did do that when I explained who I was, because we do have some listeners at the show. But
that's cool.
But for the most part, I'm the nobody that just won the golden ticket. I know my lane.
Okay. Yes,
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm not like, Lauren, can I have a moment?
I'm one of you now. Wow, that is really, really cool.
That's far out.
It was really, really cool.
So did you see any like big celebs or anybody can say?
Yeah, I mean like heading over to the coffee bar, and there's Donald Glover just chatting it up. And I'm like, well, there's Lando. He's smooth. That's awesome. And,
nice.
Damn.
Was he wearing the cape?
I just walked through his marijuana smoke. So I mean, it's nice. Like, you can't help but feel a little bit connected when.
Sure. Sure. You're breathing the same.
No, I mean,
Childish Gambino smoke.
Yeah. No, I mean, I shouldn't say that. But I mean, like, his entourage. There was just
the marijuana smoke that happened to be in his vicinity.
There was a sweet aroma in the air.
You do not know where it originated.
Exactly.
We should just say, please all don't sue us. We have no money.
Might have been medicinal.
Yeah.
Somebody has cataracts or something.
That part of the restaurant was just particularly lively for some reason. We'll just leave
it. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so those kind of moments. There's other people there, too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Far out.
How many of us get to do that?
I don't.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was a rare privilege, and I do count myself very blessed for... I mean, that just doesn't happen. Well, that just does not happen.
That is a little
boy from Windsor, Ontario, realizing his dream, yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's something to tell the kids about. Yeah.
Well, that is great. Well, that's... I mean, I could talk to you more about that all day, but maybe we should dive into the actual episode.
Let's dive into this episode.
This is going to be a long cast.
It is. You know, sorry, Frank, but yeah, if Frank likes us to try and keep it under an hour, which we hardly ever succeed at.
No,
but,
I don't think that's happening tonight.
It's not happening because we're like 32 minutes in.
Holy moly. And, oh, wow. I am so sorry, Frank.
But look at the content you're getting, people.
This is the finale. It has to be.
This is the finale. This is our big crossover. It's supersized.
Yeah. People have been waiting for this.
It's like the Jeff Zucker era of NBC when all the episodes of The Office were 40 minutes.
There
for
you go.
This is like when
some weird reason.
This is like when Gilligan's Island had the Harlem Globetrotters.
Exactly.
Just like that.
Exactly.
Just like that.
Right. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
So we're going to dive in.
Let's dive into this.
Once again, the episode, in case you've forgotten by this point.
Oh, right. Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd and DJ Khaled.
Yeah.
This, by the way,
he prefers Khaled.
Khaled.
Yeah. God, I was getting that right most of the time, and then I screwed that up.
No, because there is that R&B singer named Khalid.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm getting them mixed up.
This is Khaled. It's
This, by the way, just as a little bit of SNL trivia, this is Paul Rudd's fourth time hosting the show, not counting cameos he's done in sketches. He first hosted in 2008, and he last hosted in December 7th, 2013.
Wow. I'm surprised they didn't mention that, but maybe that's because, like, Emma Stone mentioned that was her fourth time. He didn't want to repeat that.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
He had his own gimmick for the monologue. No need to.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's dive in. We had the cold open.
Cold open
with Alec Baldwin as Trump.
Yeah,
he's singing Queen's "Don't Stop Me Now" as "Don't Stop Us Now" with and as SNL has tended to do the last couple of years, they do a big extravaganza for the Trump administration because who knows what the hell is going to happen over the summer.
They want to leave it open ended, bit of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, because I mean we're living in a hellscape week to week.
Yes,
every who knows how that's going to end?
Every day is a new nightmare.
So we had all the all stars. We had Cicely Strong as Melania. We had Beck as Mike Pence. We had 80 as Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Chris Redd as Kanye. Keenan as Clarence Thomas. Kate McKinnon as Giuliani / Gollum. Alex Moffat, Mikey Day as Eric and Donald Jr. And Robert De Niro and his cue cards as Robert Mueller.
Yeah.
Kate wasn't actually Giuliani.
She was wasn't?
She was the old attorney general guy.
The one who
steals
souls.
He steals genitalia from homeless guys. Remember?
Oh,
okay.
You remember that other
clip? We're officially reaching the point where Kate is playing so many men in the Trump administration.
They're all bald and wrinkly. And
I thought for sure that was Giuliani.
I thought so too. I didn't correct you
because every week they're bringing her out as a new. Yeah.
It's
Trump
it's
guy,
the other guy, but she's only played him a few times, and it's usually very fleeting. So I can understand the confusion.
Well, thank you for that correction,
sir. That's why we have.
But her whole point was the guitar solo, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Who they
exactly.
put her in? Yeah.
So what did you think of this, John?
I liked it because, like you said, for the finale, they got to change the tone a little bit. They want to have something that's more of it's just meant to be kind of a crescendo to highlight their sort of the political caricature that they developed throughout the year. So that's why you get everybody in this kind of big group thing. They did something very similar last year, and
I remember
it got cut down a fair bit, but it was a parade of all of their political impressions in a musical as well. Mm-hmm. They always want to have something that's a little bit more sentimental for the end of the year. And so doing something musical and giving everyone just a couple key moments to highlight their characters, I don't know, worldview. Hey, I thought that worked. Oh. It isn't the typical, you know, just news recap if you've got Trump at a desk. So I like that it wasn't that type of cold open.
And they're using Alec Baldwin as Donald Trump much more sparingly now.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what he wants, right? I think
probably.
He wants to like back away from it because he's, like, I guess, just impersonating Donald Trump wears on you.
Sure.
Just his essence just brings you down a bit.
I mean, because the simple truth is, I mean, I'm sure everybody involved thought we'll have Trump or we'll have
four
Baldwin play Trump in the lead up to the election.
It'll be a fun little stunt casting, and here we are 2.5 years later, and it won't die.
It's this Faustian bargain he made. Yeah. It's really strange.
Yeah, he kind of painted himself in a corner, but they have been smart to dial it back and only do it kind of once per run. He's had about, you know, a half a dozen to eight, I think, appearances this year.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Which, it gives him a chance to do the latest Trump news without that being every single week, which during the election cycle, it was Trump every single week. So I think they realized you needed to vary it up a bit.
And
their credit, they did.
Yeah. And it quite honestly, it gets exhausting. I mean, it's just a lot of Trump.
Trump just isn't funny. So it's almost an impossible task for Alec Baldwin to be popular in the role. Like, people don't want to see that face. So even if it's a comedian doing it, trying to do it comedically, it's still, it still has a lot of baggage on it at this point. So less is more with Trump. But this I can take. If they're going to try and mix it up and do something fun and silly with a song, I'll get on board with that.
Yeah, and it gets the show off to a big start. So
So
next we had Paul Rudd's monologue.
Yeah.
So he talked about how this was hands down the most anticipated finale of the weekend.
Our fellow nerds know that's not true.
That's true. And he said a good SNL monologue should be funny and heartfelt, like a best man speech at a wedding. So he delivered his monologue in that format.
I thought this worked. I like one joke I liked he had. He said, you know, like, because he, like you said, he hosted a show like back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I hadn't done a Marvel movie yet, so I was still treating people pretty well.
Yes.
So I was like, I dug that. That's a little dig.
Yeah.
I like it.
And talking about how he used to make out with SNL.
Yeah, because they had that recurring sketch where he just make out.
The Vogelchucks.
The Vogelchucks. Yeah.
Those sketches were oof.
John, what did this to you?
This worked. It was a fun idea to underpin the monologue, and he just has a charisma and a way about being able to deliver those kind of lines that you eat it up. Like, he's just he is a very fun presence that way.
We love Paul Rudd here.
He's like
on
a
this
big
podcast.
Like a golden retriever.
Yep. You just want to hug him. You just get lost in his eyes.
And genuinely,
why are you staring at me like that?
No reason. I mean, just
okay.
Paul Rudd's not here, so I'm just going to the next most handsome man in the room.
Thank you.
Sorry, John.
This little back and forth shtick, it's really, really, really riveting to watch.
A lot of will they, won't they.
And cut the sexual tension of the knife. We're the Sam and Diane of our day.
I was just about
or
to
of
say
this podcast, at least.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. And
but as far as monologues go, that was pretty decent.
Yeah. He has good comedic timing. He can sell pretty much any material, and this was genuinely funny. Like, they were able to find a good angle on it.
There was another throwaway line that I really liked, where he talked about how when SNL first started in 1975,
he was
30.
Yeah.
And, and that's a great joke about Paul Rudd being unaging.
His boyish looks that never...
By the way, someone do an adaptation of Picture of Dorian Gray with Paul Rudd. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Sure.
It's a no-brainer, Hollywood. Get on that.
He can't be 50. That's just insane.
It is insane.
That is insanely insane.
It is insane. I'm 46. I look 10 years older than that man.
I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm glad you said
it's accurate.
Okay.
It's accurate. So,
next sketch was the Miss Rafferty sketch.
Mrs. Rafferty.
Yeah, we're going back to Alien Encounter. Or this time, whatever.
This was time travel.
A journey
time
through time.
Yes.
Is Mrs. Rafferty, if she's sort of a trailer park denizen.
Yes.
Who has words. Yes. That was my word of the day in the calendar. Who has all sorts of weird adventures where she always ends up pantless somehow.
And her cooter and her tutor.
Her
hanging
cooter and her tutor.
But yeah, so I mean, they've done it before. They did it with Liev Schreiber and Ryan Reynolds twice, I believe. And
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Reynolds, sorry. Ryan got the other Ryan from Canada. But yeah, Ryan Gosling did it twice, and like he broke. Paul Rudd didn't break, even though there was this one part where, like, Kate is, like, literally, like, straddling him.
And humping his head or his shoulder.
Yeah.
And he kept it together.
Rudd's a pro, man. Rudd's a pro.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as sketches go, I thought it was okay. I mean, I feel like it is like kind of the sketch is kind of getting a little
played out.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I still liked it. I still laughed, but I was like, I mean, have they done this maybe one or two too many times? Or
What do you think, John? What do you say?
It's possible, but to their credit, they only trot it out typically about once a season. We have seen it twice this season, but yeah. If we look at how long she's been doing it, it averages out maybe once or twice a season, which is okay. Like that's not they're not beating into the ground week over week kind of a thing. And when they bring it back, it seems like they wait long enough that they have a new storyline for, which makes it a little easier to insert some fresh material. Okay. So I think this one got over. I don't think it's tops, right? Like there have been a few classic ones where there was some fun breaking or whatever. Just there were some that seemed to cut above. This still seemed worthwhile because it's a strong character. It's a crowd pleaser. It's a great way because it's so goofy and easy to get on board with how just ridiculous the character is, especially like, you know, when she's accosting the host. It's rousing as a first sketch out of the gate. So it served its purpose, and I don't know. I thought it was passable, if not fresh.
I liked it, and I enjoyed the Rotten Tomatoes terminology that you brought
in. You slipped that right in.
Passable, if not fresh.
If not fresh.
I did like they had a little runner throughout the sketch where Paul Rudd was just keeps bringing up Showtime because he just got three months of Showtime.
I think that's, but I think they did that with the other guys, too.
Did they?
I didn't like Ryan Gosling keep mentioning his hat. Like, oh, you guys, thanks for giving me this sweet-ass hat.
Gosh, I don't remember that at all.
The characters had a little bit of color. Just trailer park mentality that they're able to play. This time it's all about the...
There were a few good lines. You know, I did like Kate saying, hey, you know, I don't normally go for girls, but if nothing else is open, I'll eat at a Taco Bell.
All right, I remember that. And the audience was like, whoa!
And I always love the euphemisms they come up, because Mrs. Rafferty invariably loses her pants.
Yes.
And this week we had... My clam casino and bean burrito were out for the world to see.
I don't remember that. Oh.
Yeah, that was towards the end of the sketch when she ended up at the bar mitzvah.
That is graphic.
Yeah, those still play. Those are I'm amazed that they've come up with so many euphemisms. Now they've done it so many times, but they always land.
God bless those writers they come up with so many euphemisms for genitalia.
Mm-hmm. Clam
casino.
Wow.
Use it in your everyday life.
People. Kudos to you guys. Kudos to the writers on that one.
What do we have next?
Game of Thrones rap.
Oh.
Mr. Pete Davidson rapping about Game of Thrones, and then halfway through his rap, it comes out that he doesn't really watch Game of Thrones, but he feels like he has to rap about it because everybody watches Game of Thrones.
Right.
So, and then I think Keenan comes out and says, you don't have to rap about Game of Thrones if you don't watch it. Rap about what you actually watch. And then he ends up rapping about Grace and Frankie on Netflix.
Yes.
Which that was an interesting twist.
Yeah, that was cool. What did you think, John?
I think I would have liked it more if I watched the actual show.
Game of Thrones
and Frankie? Either. Grace and Frankie in particular, because you know the whole back half of that music video was all these deep references to the show. So if you haven't watched it, you don't know who's hooking up with who. All that stuff that they reference, it just goes over my head. So,
yeah,
fun premise, but it just wasn't, it wasn't for me.
I hear you.
Okay. I haven't watched Grace and Frankie. We've also established that Darren and I have not watched Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we're totally out the loop. But I'll talk about Barry, though. I love Barry.
Grace and Frankie, I know. I believe the basic premise is that Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda, they're two women whose husbands have realized they're gay, and they've left their wives for each other.
Yes.
So, and then it's the friendship that develops between them.
Right.
Okay. So, and
that's more than I knew about the show.
And they've gotten like 5 seasons out of it, which is amazing for a Netflix show.
A lot of people say it's very good. I will watch it. I just haven't watched it yet. But, I mean, as far as the sketch goes, I did like the part where... they have DJ Khaled come in once in a while saying, you know, Grace, like doing his little hype man thing.
Right.
Grace and Frankie. It's a good show. Grace and Frankie. It's a good show.
Yeah, he says it so, like, sincere. Like, I couldn't come up with any more clever rhyme for this. So I'm just going to tell you how it is. Mm-hmm. It had its moments. It was fun. If I knew anything about the shows, then it probably would have hit a lot harder. But I still like it when they take something that is supposedly, like, hardcore and intense, and then they insert something really milquetoast into it. That's just a fun way to mess up a sketch.
It's a great juxtaposition, and we had cameos from Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda.
Fun. And Paul Rudd.
I wasn't sure if that was footage that they specifically did for SNL for the part. Or
well, they were wearing like "We Love Pete" T-shirts.
Oh, okay. So that went over my head.
Oh, did you weren't able to see that?
Well, the first time through, I was watching it on the LCD monitor in the studio, so that's far enough away that you might not be able to make out the T-shirts. And then the second time is the LCD monitor in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And so maybe I was chatting with someone or something like that. But it's not like a focused rewatch where it's like your whole,
of course,
all your attention's on it. So
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what the t-shirt said, but they were Davidson themed.
I think Lily Tomlin once said, like, Pete can get it or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, picture
of Pete it's fresh footage. It's not even.
Absolutely.
There's nothing.
Absolutely.
What I thought was maybe they just, the graphics department just put that on the shirts.
It didn't look like it.
Yeah, it looks like they've taped it sent it over.
It didn't look like it. Next, we have Totally Uncharted Territory for SNL, a game show sketch.
What?
I know.
Have they ever done this?
I don't think so.
Huh.
Let me check the internet. Nope.
Beep boop, beep boop. That's the sound of the internet. Yeah,
no results found. So
Not found. 404. All right.
This was a game show called What's Wrong with This Picture, with Keenan as the host, Elliot Pants, and stupid contestants played by who was it? It was Paul Rudd, Pete Davidson, and 80. Yes.
Right.
And the joke here was, well, they can't see what's obviously wrong with the picture.
Yeah.
And not only can they not see what's wrong with the picture, they impose their own crazy on the picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they see everything but the mistake.
Yeah. They have two kids on a swing set, and Pete Davidson guests. Oh, they're what's wrong with this picture? They're siblings who know they shouldn't have kissed.
Yeah.
And their guesses just keep getting more and more outlandish.
Yeah, I mean, this just kind of reminded me of like those focus group sketches they did, like the one with Rachel Brosnahan and the one with Donald Glover, where they're doing like the Barbie doll, and even the one with James McAvoy, they were just asking him questions, and like just these three people coming up with these weird, outlandish answers.
Right.
It had that sort of tone to it.
The game is you're trying to extract something of value from the idiots in the scene, and you just never get the results you want.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's now that I think of it, it's even kind of similar to the Mr. Wizard sketch that Sam Rockwell did.
The kids can't perform.
Oh, yeah.
Where Sam Rockwell dropped the F-bomb.
Yeah.
You can't be this effing stupid.
Oh, boy. Yipes.
Which, this was fun. I enjoyed this. It wasn't a classic for the ages, but I thought it was solid.
Perfectly fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it too. I love that they don't reuse their game show premises too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like they do a whole lot of Family Feud, Celebrity Edition. That's in its own league. But for these one-offs, it's nice that it's not whatever Match Game or whatever. They used to really sometimes drive their game shows into the ground. They don't do that so much. So
that's true.
I will give it marks for that.
That is true. And God bless the poor set designers who have to design a new game show's
set. Can't we just reuse this one?
every other week, it seems like.
No, they're always complaining that they don't have enough time for some reason.
So next we had our musical segment.
Yeah, DJ Khaled. He did the best.
With a legion of superstars on with him.
Yeah, I mean, just because DJ Khaled, he's not a rapper, but he always like has people. He brings out other rappers and he just kind of does a little hype man thing, but like, he the best. And he just says his catchphrases over and over again.
Yeah, so I tried to list everybody. I think I probably missed some names. We had Lil Wayne, Lil Sean, Jeremiah,
a lot of littles.
Meek Mill.
I think he was in the second half.
Oh yeah, you're right. He was in. I have Meek Millie. I'm not sure if that's right.
No, Meek Mills. That's the same dude.
Okay.
SZA was in the second part. John Legend, I believe, was in the second part.
Yeah, he was in the second part. And Lil Baby.
I didn't even know who that was.
Tiger Hair. Little Baby's Tiger Hair.
Little Baby Tiger. Are you making? Is that real?
You know the one performer that came out that has like the orange stripes? That was Little Baby, right?
That was Little Baby, I believe, yes.
Oh, I thought his name was Little Baby Tiger Hair.
No, but that would be adorable.
Dude, you could have just said that and be like, all right, I guess it's some new rapper named Little Baby Tiger Hair.
It totally tracks as a rap name.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, there were so many guest musicians in these segments, I thought that I might have been one of them.
Sure.
I'm honestly not sure. But
Big Sean. Jay Blevin, I believe. God, we sound so old. I think that was it.
I've said to Darren before that this podcast is just going to be a document of us gradually losing touch with all the mainstream popular
it's
culture.
A chronicle of the world passing you by.
It really is.
Why don't you guys have on the Mamas and the Papas or whatever?
I mean, this was good. It was like lots of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my personal thing, but.
Yeah, I mean, as far as hip-hop goes, I'm kind of more like an old-school hip-hop guy. It's like, I could talk about 90s hip-hop all the live long day.
Mm-hmm.
But like the modern, the new age, these new kids, I'm like, I don't know, whatever. I thought it was okay. It was just definitely a lot of high energy. I actually liked how in the second performance, there was like a sort of a tribute to Nipsey Hussle, who passed away. He was gunned down
a couple months ago. I thought that was pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it was like a medley of different songs, and yeah, it seemed to be, the audience seemed to be hyped for it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I am so far out of my depth on this one.
Are you not DJ Khaled? He's the best.
I wouldn't have known who he was.
I'm amazed SNL. We talked about it this much, quite frankly.
Yeah. I can say, like in this kind of situation, all I can do is just say, was it catchy? Like, that's my only definer. For
exactly.
And I thought the second song was catchy, to be perfectly honest. Like, that was a lot of fun. Even though, you know, they had a solemn tribute portion of it, it just melodically, you know, it was connecting with me a little bit more in the first one. So, as a, you know, nerdy, out-of-touch white guy who has no idea what DJ Khaled and friends are all about, I'll say, hey, it was catchy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I mean, DJ Khaled, I think he's kind of like a Sean Diddy combo, where he's not like a performer, really. He's like more of a producer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he makes beats, and then he just kind of talks over his friends rapping,
sure,
saying his catchphrases. Yeah. So
basically, as long as it's not Greta Van Fleet, I'm happy.
Wow,
guys weren't so hot on that.
You're
either.
still the rage still burns bright within you.
They were not good.
I didn't even bring up Greta Van Fleet. You brought it up.
Yeah, no, I know.
You upset
I know.
Yourself.
Well, I did.
The pain is real.
It is. Wow. It is. So next we had Weekend Update.
Weekend Update. I thought this was probably one of the stronger parts of the night.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
I thought it was good. John, what did you think?
I wasn't paying too much attention during the live show, just because we had some conversation going on about DJ Khaled at that point, because Echo's guests had some opinions.
Oh, okay. All right.
But anyways.
Positive, negative?
Positive.
Okay. Oh, okay. I thought they were like trash.
All right.
No, but it's just listening to them kind of be more excited. About,
sure, sure.
Don't get me wrong, them. There isn't.
What do you mean,
There was a slight.
I'm sorry. I'm just fucking with you.
There was a slight ethnic variation between Heidi's guests and Echo's guests.
Okay. And you're right, man. I'm sorry.
So, anyways, whereas maybe Heidi's guests didn't have as much to contribute to that conversation, I was gleaning that they were excited when some of the performers were coming out, and was happy to see that. And they were trying to explain why I should be excited too.
Yeah.
And just went all.
And you're nodding politely, in your nice white boy Canadian way.
They were genuinely trying to give me something worthwhile to offer.
Right.
When we talked
about
on the cast, and I couldn't retain any of it. So. Anyways. I
probably would have been the same way. It
played very well.
And they would have been so much more disappointed in you, Darren.
It's like, I'm just waiting for Heavy D and the boys to come out or something like that. Something I can glom onto. This is what
Weekend Update.
Yeah.
The dress rehearsal version, super sloppy, but that's okay because that's part of dress rehearsal, especially with Weekend Update, because they're still working out the material and there's a lot of tightening that happens with their jokes and,
sure.
and just, them having a second run at just figuring out the right delivery and how to sting the punchline and everything. So Jost and Che were sloppy, but despite that, the material was so good, especially the, hey, let's give each other jokes.
You were there for
that. Yeah, so... because their material was good, you could cut through all the sloppiness and still see that, this is going to be a good Weekend Update.
Now with the bit where they switch jokes, which I enjoy it when they do this.
Yeah, me too.
Were there any different jokes in the dress?
It's a bit.
Like, yeah.
You have to understand that this is not actually what's happening on TV.
Okay. That's kind of what I figured.
But what they do is they have all the jokes. They do it during dress. Then they try to change it up enough that it'll help make the energy good for the live show too.
Because so you have a more spontaneous reaction.
Exactly, because if it was all exactly the same material, then they wouldn't really be able to do it justice on the live show. So is still a little bit of mystery and a little bit of surprise involved, but the bit itself with slightly different material did happen in dress.
Okay.
But still fun. When they do it in dress and they have to be a little bit more spontaneous and have more genuine reactions, it at least helps them to kind of remember how the part should flow so that they can sort of reproduce that performance during the live show. So it's neat to see when it's a little bit more edgy and real in dress, but they're good enough performers that they're able to keep that. Even though you know that it isn't real if you've seen the dress rehearsal, it still plays really, really well.
So it gave you a greater appreciation for
their performance ability. Yeah, because they're genuinely put off and genuinely looking like they've just been, gut punched or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Having to deliver this on air.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It works. It's great. So just knowing that was in there, I knew that Jost and Che were going to have a good week.
Yeah, I've always gotten a kick out of it when they did the switching jokes, because it's basically the two of them trying to sabotage each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a strong premise.
Like Che trying to get Jost to say something super racist.
Right.
All right. Well, do you want to talk about that first, or do you want to talk about the...
Well, we're talking about that, so we may as well go on, and then we'll back up and we'll cover Cecily.
Cecily's... Oh, all right. The way you said it, I was like, whoa. All right, but yeah.
I didn't mean it that way.
Did you? Didn't you?
Only a subtext.
Oh boy. All right, but yeah. So this one segment, I thought it was the strongest segment of the night. It's basically where Jost and Che, you know, give each other.
Or Jost and Jay.
Jost and
Jay.
Well, I'll switch your roots.
Yeah.
Applicable.
Jost and Jay, they basically like give each other jokes to say on air. Right. And of course, the trick is like, you know, they're kind of giving other jokes that they haven't read, or they say they haven't read up until now. Mm-hmm. They give each other jokes that like kind of sort of sabotage them into saying something wildly inappropriate for all to hear.
A joke that maybe Che could deliver. Jost has no business delivering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And like, yeah, the jokes, this is just above and beyond.
Yeah, I mean they were all solid jokes. I rewatched it.
Did you write them down?
Yeah, I wrote them down. We had there was a track star who was nicknamed White Lightning. He ran whatever distance it was in 9.9 seconds, and Joe says, "I am also nicknamed White Lightning because I finish in under 10 seconds."
Yeah, zingaroo. And then Che's joke afterwards, I thought was interesting too, where like Che basically said, "So." It's been found out that there's a dog disease that can be passed on to humans. And then he says, fine, I'll wear a condom.
That was a great joke.
Part of me thought that was like maybe a nod to that whole dust-up he got into with the Upper Ox rider.
Oh, you know, that didn't even occur to me.
I was like, is that a little wink or no?
No, I think that's right. Just a good old-fashioned dog effing joke.
just like Mom used to make.
Just good, clean fun.
All right. I thought maybe they were doing like a little sly thing. But
Next we had a joke that I think Darren should read.
So
I don't want to get letters.
I was wondering if you're going to read.
Yeah.
So Joe says this joke saying that there were people who are moving into formerly wild areas of Africa. And because of that, the humans are disrupting the chimpanzee culture. And, you know, which is what my grandpa calls hip hop.
Yes.
And the audience was like, oh.
Yeah.
Even I don't get offended.
You felt the recoil through the broadcast.
And even after Joe said that, he was like, why?
Next we had the Catholic Church is tackling the clergy sex abuse scandal head on instead of their usual position of face down, ass up.
And again, the audience was like, whoa!
Yeah. And then...
do you want to say the last one?
I can say the last one. Or
you
John,
can?
Would you like to read the last one?
Oh, except I don't have notes.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely will.
We had the last one that Joe gave. It's the one that starts with MLK. Can you see it on my notes?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember how they set it up.
I can read it.
You do it, because sorry, it's all a blur for me. And then all right. They changed that up from dress.
So there was a substitute teacher who resigned after telling her students that MLK killed himself. But in her defense, he is the one who decided to keep running his mouth.
Right.
And look, and Jost was like, after I said, dude, you're going to get me murdered.
Like, Jost was horrified by the graphic, which was just a shot of Martin Luther King. And I think the caption said something about suicide.
Yeah, like, soon as I saw that picture of MLK behind him, I was like, oh, this isn't going to be good.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not like, I don't get offended easily. I don't get shocked easily. That last joke, I was like, oh, shit. Whoa. That took me aback. I clutch my pearls.
But I also love this bit because it's one of the few times you really see the friendship between Jost and Che.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, you can see they're buddies. They enjoy busting each other's chops. And
good
I think
repartee.
It's where they show the most chemistry, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back. So one of the first people on Weekend Update was Janine Pyro, played by Cecily Strong.
Yes. Mm. I've heard she plays for that character.
I've said that right.
Yes.
And, I mean, she does this character really well. Like, I don't know Janine Pyro that well, but I get a sense of how she could be just from this impression.
I really only know her through SNL because I'm not a Fox News watcher.
Oh.
So,
we don't even have Fox News, so I'm even more in the dark.
Oh, my God. You live in a paradise.
My God.
Wow. And I get to go back there tomorrow.
Oh, you lucky son of a bitch.
No Fox, free weed. Healthcare. My God.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, Janine Pyro, she lost 20% of her advertisers after comments she made about a Muslim congresswoman. So she's doing all sorts of racist type behavior.
As Fox people are wont to do.
Mm-hmm. As they have been known to do.
Yeah.
And here she's just doing... Last time Cecily came on update, she was doing the out-of-the-chair flops.
Yeah.
This time she's doing spit takes right onto Colin.
Right into his face.
We're going to take the most juvenile humor, and we're just going to go to 11 with it.
Yeah, and then and he tries to avoid the spit take, and like he waits until she swallows her drink, and then Che gets her another one.
Yeah. And then Cecily says, oh, thank you, Keenan. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
There's nothing Colin can do to avoid the repeated.
Yeah, and he like holds her arm at the end, and she like just pulls out another drink and throws it at him.
Yeah, and he's just breaking, laughing hysterically.
And it's so, I mean, it's a secret to a great weekend update. You pour drinks on Colin. That's all you need.
That's it.
It's a winning formula.
If they did that every week, I would be there for it.
Yep.
And he got so cracked up at the end that Cecily didn't have her exit line, and so she actually said to him, "Say my outro," because she was just stuck there. She had no other dialogue.
Just end this.
And he's just like spattered with all this liquid.
Yeah, yeah. Even Che has got some water on him.
Yeah,
too.
he got some of the backlash.
That was a serious spit take. She didn't hold back. It was just as messy in dress. Like, it played out pretty much exactly, and Cecily was on top of the performance.
But I love that she goes 100%. 110% on this stuff, and
she's a strong performer.
She's one of my favorites.
You know, no pun intended.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And oh God, I hope she doesn't leave.
We could talk about that on our wrap up.
Yeah, there's some rumors she might be leaving.
Really?
Ooh, which we hope not. But, or speculation or whatever. Lastly, on Weekend Update, we had
Leslie Jones
coming on talking about the new Alabama abortion law.
Yeah, she was dressed up in a Handmaid's Tales outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And just talking about how, you know, just basically dressing down all the men that voted in this horrible, horrible law.
Yeah, yeah. She got very sincere at the end.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, it was just pretty much a straightforward...
Yeah, no, this was commentary wrapped in humor, not the other way around. Yeah,
yes, so, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, so she didn't hold back. She got a little bit poignant there at the end. How do we feel, though, as comedy? That's the big question.
I have mixed feelings about it as comedy because, you know, we had such a high point. We had a couple high points with the Colin getting sprayed with the water and the back and forth of the jokes. Right. I thought those were both just such great high notes.
This brought it down a little bit.
But where else would you do it? You wouldn't have like a big serious moment and then go back to, hey, comedy.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, yeah, I don't know how else they could have done it, quite frankly.
And she handled it pretty well. She couched it in funny jokes, and she was able to make a good point and then follow it up with something playful to kind of wind it back and put the audience at ease again, and then hit him with another point. So it was smart.
Mm-hmm.
It's valuable to have on the show. Obviously, the writers felt that this was an important enough thing, or at least Leslie, because she generates her own material. So and she had allies at the show. A lot of people that felt this was really important. So when they have something that they really feel they need to say, and they can try and find some reasonably comedic way to present it, I'll give them high marks for the attempt.
Yeah.
For me, obviously, this isn't the type of comedy that I think brings the show up, because it is serious, and it's hard to divorce yourself from the actual social message in it. But still, I think it was an admirable try to make it both. Though at the end of it, you're not laughing; you're being like, "Oh, okay, she's fired up. This is a big deal for her."
Yeah, I mean, a little of that goes a long way for me, because I don't like it when the balance of the show tips way over to sentimental. I much prefer it to be funny. Not all times, but at least most times.
Yeah, like like when that now controversial, like when they opened with Kate McKinnon with playing
after Hillary. I thought that was a bit much personally.
I agree with
it's a tough line to walk. They only really do these sort of things when they feel it's important enough that it warrants maybe shifting the energy in the show, because the message is just necessary. So I respect how impassioned the piece is.
No, absolutely.
Even if it's not obviously the best comedy.
And, you know, I mean, for the record, I pretty much agree with everything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There, so, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Okay. Leslie, don't come here. You've got allies here.
yes. Don't come busting down our door.
Yeah,
please.
No, I've said before, Leslie, who I used to be really down on, she really has grown on me this season. That was one of the surprises of the season.
She's become a way better performer.
Yeah, she's much more polished as a live performer now.
Yeah, her and Pete Davidson both, they've been at the show long enough that they finally seem to know how to do sketch. How to step away more from their stand-up and be competent across the board.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer having sketch performers who can hit the ground running, but
you got to have a lot of different voices. It is a comedy variety show.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So she serves a purpose regardless. But they've been there so long that you can't help but absorb the skills of the people around you. So.
Yeah,
absolutely. Our next sketch, the antique store sketch,
mm-hmm.
with the music box.
Yeah, we had Paul Rudd as an antique dealer. He sings a song, Fancy Party, about a farting ballerina.
Yeah.
And then as a sketch, and nobody knows this song, as the sketch goes on, Cecily knows the song, and then so does Kyle, and then Keenan enters, as he was wont to do halfway through a sketch.
Right. And then they sing the song about a farting ballerina, all of them.
And then at the end, it turns out to be an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Because you need an out.
Just a weird non sequitur sketch. I did not. This one didn't do much for me.
Okay.
Like, yeah. For a minute, I thought it was kind of going to kind of be like that that Chris Hemsworth sketch where they play this song, saying, "Oh yeah, you know this song."
Yeah.
And like, I thought they'd go
it
along.
It seemed very much like
that.
The
slowly being won over. Like you think you have no allies. Nobody else knows this song.
In the Steve Carell episode.
That too.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's a premise they go back to a lot.
Yeah.
I thought that part was amusing, and I love a good fart joke song.
Farts are funny.
But
farts are funny, people.
You're right. The ending is a little bit jarring. And
it
certainly didn't seem like that was the best out for the sketch. But hey,
yeah,
they needed something.
Yeah, it was just very out of nowhere at the end.
Yeah, it was just like, what?
I don't have much else to say about that. So.
Yeah. Me neither. And next sketch was The View.
The View with Leslie as Whoopi, Cecily as Abby Huntsman, Kate McKinnon as Joy Behar, Melissa as Anna Navarro, and AD as Megan McCain.
Yes, and Paul Rudd comes out as Pete Buttigieg.
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. Buttigieg.
We're still learning how to pronounce the man's name.
Pete B.
Buttigieg, as I believe how it's pronounced.
Gesundheit.
There was a good line from Paul Rudd. He said, "You know, America's ready to accept not only a gay man, but a boring gay man." And we had Beck come in as his husband. And then, let's see, my other note says all the View women have crushes on Joe Biden.
Oh, yeah, that was that, too.
I
mean, as far as sketch, I thought it was better the first time. This one was...
Yeah.
It seemed like they were off a little bit. Like, maybe the timing seemed off a little bit.
This was a big mess in dress.
Yeah.
Because of a lot of back and forth where everyone has a line that someone needs to cut them off. Like, that's kind of the nature of the sketch.
Right. You know, and that's the nature of the View,
off.
I think.
Joy Bear has to cut someone off. Like, it's a lot of... quick back and forth, and that's really sloppy when you're not really good and comfortable with the material. So it was difficult at dress. It was a lot longer at dress.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem with the sketch is that they chopped it down
to
its core, and I don't think everyone was quite up to speed with the changes. There was even a couple camera cuts that undercut some jokes. Like
the whole
Biden thing, they were supposed to be on Whoopi with her Joe Biden pillow. They were supposed to be on her as they're setting
and
that
the timing
up.
When it's just a little off on a cutaway like that, it's
in dress they at least had the timing for that, so I understood what that joke was supposed to be, but they just missed the camera change, probably because of all the rejiggering with
I wonder
sketch.
If they're going to re-edit that a little bit. I didn't watch this
sometimes
rewatch this one on YouTube.
Yeah, sometimes they do clean up, so it may look better. Maybe they just they wouldn't have put in the dress rehearsal one because it was even more of a mess,
but maybe they could just put in shots from that as an insert, like maybe the back half of the dress rehearsal or something.
No. Well, they have the feed from both cameras regardless, so
right,
they can do the camera cut and just readjust it after.
Oh, like, okay,
the timing
of course
of it.
yeah that makes sense.
Oh, right on.
Yeah,
all right. But as far as sketch, it was like
it was,
but it's mostly because of, like you said, like all the cues that they missed and whatnot.
Yeah,
it
was difficult and just a little clumsy because of how much they were messing with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Next, we had a film segment with Leslie Jones and Kyle Mooney reviving the old running gag about them having a torrid love affair.
Yeah.
So this one, they were sort of reminiscing about those old sketches, and then it turns romantic.
Yes.
And then they play the Carpenters' "Close to You." And they have a fantasy sequence where they get married, and then it cuts to them having sex in Paul Rudd's dressing room.
Full out boning.
And then...
Like him on top of her. I was kind of shocked.
Paul's
taken aback by that.
Paul's creeped out at first, and then it turns into a big three-way with Paul Rudd, as you do.
Yeah.
That's right.
As you are wont to
do. Then him and Kyle are full on making out.
Yep.
Tongue on tongue.
It's not Paul Rudd hosting an SNL episode if he's not making out with a dude.
That's right. Paul Rudd didn't make out with a dude. Did he really host your show? That's what I say.
So
that sketch, I was, I don't know. I wasn't wild about it.
It was a running gag I was never terribly fond of, personally.
The whole Leslie Kyle pre-tapes, you
wouldn't
think on those?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Leslie or Kyle, so putting them together, it really didn't do much for me.
I'm going to be the voice of dissent on this.
Okay, all right.
I love all the Leslie Kyle Okay. SNL cinematic universe things that they've done.
Oh, so this spoke to you.
It did, but it also confused me because I think they just introduced us to like phase two of the SNL cinematic universe because they're going full multiverse.
Wow.
This reality is layered on top of the SNL CU. So
they got meta.
I don't know what to make of the world building logic of it all, but I thought this was fun. How can you not be on board?
I mean, the sloppy grossness of it. They're a funny juxtaposition. I mean, I get that. I don't know if I can explain it,
but it's just I don't know. Maybe it's because like I'm not a huge fan of Kyle Mooney either. I don't know his humor. Like when
he's very hit and miss. For us.
But his like painful noises as he's. Uh-huh. Like
mounting her,
that's funny.
Like, yeah,
he's just such a dweeb, and Leslie is such a big presence.
Yeah,
how is that not comic gold? Like, I enjoy them. It's,
okay,
yeah,
I,
no,
I'm sure it's not for everyone. It's all subjective, but I get love that. I eat them up.
And it had its moments. I mean, hey, I will thumbs up on any sketch that ends with a giant three-way with Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Oh my god,
more comedy sketches should end with Paul Rudd three-ways.
Right, when is that going to be a movie?
I think my record bears this out. I think my record is clear on this question.
But yeah, I mean,
and that is why I should be your next senator.
Oh yeah, 2020. But I mean, to give you like, I did like the that one sketch that Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett wrote, where it was just like him and it was Kyle and Beck, and it was like during the women's walkout day where Scarlett Johansson hosted.
Oh, that was wonderful.
That was a really funny one. Like,
and they kept talking over all the women.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a totally different sketch. That's oblivious do-gooders who are derailing a situation without realizing it. But this is the fictitious behind the scenes world of SNL.
Yes.
But I mean, whatever.
Yeah, he was just naming that as an example of a Kyle thing that he's like.
Oh, okay. I like his stuff. So. There you go.
Oh, okay. I see.
So. You know, as we said, he can be hit and miss with us. Sometimes we really love him. Sometimes we're just like,
But that's just NSS.
Yeah.
Right. So on the final sketch, I kind of feel like the sketch should have been bumped up a little bit. I kind of dug the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
The Ouija board sketch with Melissa Villaseñor is kind of anchoring this one here.
Yeah.
So basically, in this one, it's there's a bunch of teenage girls having a slumber party. Paul Rudd plays the, you know, nerdy dad. You know, it's like, hey, girls. Mm-hmm. And then the girls are, you know, playing with the Ouija board. And they summon a demon through this Ouija board. And then the demon...
Beelthar.
Yes. And then the demon...
Or Thor.
Beelthor. And so then they asked the demon, which one of us is going to get married first. And he said, oh, it's going to be Barbara. And then they say, all right, thanks, demon. We're going to order pizza. And the demon's like, well, you know, I like pizza. I could stick around for a little bit. And it's just, the demon basically sort of becomes like an unwanted party guest. Yeah. Like that weird person who got invited to the party.
She's the odd man out. She can't get
right. Exactly. Like John in this episode.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I didn't say that.
Right. I didn't say which John.
Oh.
I like pizza.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So, yeah.
No, that's cool, John.
Yeah, we're kind of done with you. Yeah.
That's cool. That's
like,
cool.
Oh, no, we should get pizza with pineapples on it. It's like, pineapple, that's gross. It's like, yeah, you know, I was just kidding. I was joking. Yeah. We shouldn't get it. Like, as soon as I said it, I was like,
There was really impressive makeup on Melissa. I mean, in this, you know, she had a great costume and she had these huge horns. I mean, she looked really great as the demonic presence. The camera work was also off on this sketch a little bit, I noticed.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one because they have to cut at certain times because they have lighting cues. They take the demon side of the stage and make it less dramatic very quickly. Like
that's true. Yeah.
Because she has to just become now like a sympathetic character.
It becomes very mundane.
They take it out of the evil mode and now, you know, even the damned need to be loved kind of a thing.
That's a great line.
There you go.
Even the damned need to be loved, baby.
So there was a couple challenges there. Fun fact, this was actually something that they tried on the Emma Thompson episode last week.
Oh! Yeah, I had a feeling that this was something that was originally written for a female host because Paul Rudd's character coming in seemed very extraneous.
Yeah. Like, why would you pitch that to Paul Rudd? You could be the dad that has almost no purpose.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because I was like, I'm sure they wrote this for a female host and she was one of the slumber party people or even the demon. So that's
interesting. Oh, that makes sense.
And Emma Thompson was the demon.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting. Wow. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. She was more over the top with it, but Melissa gave the better performance, in my opinion. So Melissa's keeping pace with Emma Thompson, as far as I'm concerned.
I wonder why that was cut the first time. Was it cut for time? Was it cut for... because it just wasn't there yet?
It was slightly retooled. This was a more polished version as far as the script was concerned. There was some stuff that they rejiggered. It wasn't a total note-for-note repeat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I would say, yeah, it just wasn't fully baked. They looked at it from the Emma Thompson one and said, this just isn't quite ready.
Yeah.
That's my hunch, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. I love this behind-the-scenes info we're
getting.
Look
at, you're getting this a scoop here, people.
This is wonderful.
All right.
You guys could actually go to a dress rehearsal, and then you would have these same insights.
What?
Yeah, it's true.
How do you even do that?
I mean, that seems like work. That requires us doing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I mean, don't you have to like, stay online for days or something?
Yeah. Not if you're 45 minutes out of town. You guys could just show up on Saturday morning and still probably get in, like, you know, 50%.
This is true.
Time.
Yeah, we should make a point of doing this some Saturday when, you know, the weather is not too chilly.
It's an eye-opener. You look at the show totally different once you've actually seen it.
Yeah, you know? we got to do this. I mean, if for no other reason, because it would make a fun episode.
Oh, that's true. All right, done. You sold us, John.
Yep.
You sold us. All right, and that's the episode.
That was the show. That was, I mean, how do we feel about this as a finale? You have a rating system on your show, the SNL After Party.
Yeah, so why don't we switch hats here?
And yes.
We'll play my little ratings
Absolutely.
Game here.
I will turn the steering wheel over to you, sir.
Very good. Okay, so moment of the night. I'll put it to John first.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to, like, go through scan my notes real quick.
Moment of the night.
I think, you know, moment of the night.
Moment of the night.
It was either Weekend Update, Colin getting soaked with the with the throne, the spit takes, or the switching off of the jokes. I love both of those. Those would be my highlight. Those would be moment of the night for me.
Okay, Darren, what do you got?
I got to give it all to the Weekend Update, Colin Joe switching jokes. I mean, my God, that was... That was definitely the highlight of the show. That was a point where I was just like, whoa.
It was the biggest laughs for sure.
That was definitely the moment of the night for me.
I'm going to go with the spit takes. Simply because Cecily just gives her all to those performances, and I just
absolutely
really love it when she just brings the heat. So
yeah.
I was definitely riveted.
She's a treasure.
She is.
Okay, so best sketch. What do you got,
best
Darren?
Best sketch.
This might shock you guys, but as far as like a full sketch overall, I might go with the Ouija board one, the last sketch of the night.
It had a solid premise. Like, there's some smart ideas in there.
Yeah, and like Paul Rudd had a couple of good lines in here. Like when Melissa left, when she was like, you know, calling Satan to pick her up. It's like, Satan, he couldn't pick me up.
Yeah.
They're being totally fake, and Paul Rudd comes in. It's like, hey, where'd the goth kid go?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
He's in total dad mode. Like,
I love that he called her the goth kid.
Yeah.
That was great.
And then when he said, you're Ashley, right? And it's like, no, dad, this is B.L. Thor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is that Greek? I don't know. Like,
Mazel tov.
He did have some great dorky dad lines.
Yeah.
I mean, he was pretty extraneous to the sketch, but he made the most of what he had.
Yeah. I would say that's a sketch for me.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think I'm going to have to go with Journey Through Time with Mrs. Rafferty. It's a recurring bit, but it's not one that I've ever really gotten sick of. I don't think they've overdone it still.
Mm-hmm.
If they did it more than like twice a season, it could have that danger. But
sure.
I always enjoy it. I mean, you know, Kate McKinnon, she's just a killer.
Ooh.
And kudos to Paul Rudd for not breaking during that, as Ryan Gosling usually did.
Did it twice.
But
twice,
and you know, it can get a little old having a sketch where somebody breaks every time.
Yeah, to have them not break was kind of refreshing.
Exactly. Wow. That was enough to change it up for me. So, what about you?
Can someone give me a quick rundown of the sketches?
No,
I don't have any.
No. Okay, we had.
Was it cold open?
Cold open. Trump singing Queen.
Okay, not the cold open.
This first sketch was Journey Through Time with Mrs. Rafferty, which I chose. That we had the Game of Thrones rap.
Right.
We had the game show, What's Wrong with this Pitcher?
Yeah, it's competent.
Weekend Update.
Yeah.
Then Weekend Update, then the Antique Store. Then there was The View, Kyle and Leslie.
And then the Slumber Party.
And then Slumber Party.
You know what? Nothing trumps Jost and Che giving each other jokes.
Okay.
It has to come down. For me, that was more belly laughs than any of the other live materials.
All right.
Yeah.
Good choice.
All right. MVP. Let's go, John.
MVP of the episode. You're allowed to pick the host?
Yep.
Anyone who's under your rules? Okay.
If you're on screen, you're eligible.
I think I'm going to have to give it to Cecily for the spit takes and the thank you, Keenan. I mean, she was just perfect.
Yep.
That was great.
She does good. What do you got, Darren?
I'll give it to Che. I mean, just because he wrote those jokes for...
Yeah.
For Jost in the segment, and there was that one point where after Joe said one of the jokes. I think it was the hip hop culture joke. Mm-hmm. Che looked at him and said, "I wouldn't have said that."
Yeah,
that was a little funny thing.
That was great.
Yeah, I'll give it to Che.
Yeah, his little follow ups and his quips and just how loose they are. Sometimes that just sells the joke all the better. Yeah.
He's great at putting those buttons on.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
What about you?
MVP. I'm going with Cecily.
High five.
There you go.
Yeah.
Solid night for her for all the same reasons. When she gets into a character, she's fearless and she'll go all the way with her spit takes and all the rest of it.
She is so good at playing the middle-aged women.
Yes.
It's a talent of hers, and just particularly those characters in particular, I really love to see her do.
Because of her solid work with her middle-aged characters that I let her cut in front of me at the bar at the after party.
You were there in front of me?
Yeah. I said, you know what? My drink is not more important than Cecily. She worked hard tonight.
No. So she earned that drink.
Here, Cecily.
What was her drink? I'm very curious now.
Oh, you know what? Now I should have paid attention because that would have been an awesome story. That would have been the best way to wrap that up, and I didn't pay any attention. I was just more concerned with my drink.
She's like a martini person.
Damn it, Murray.
I want to say she was drinking wine. I want to say she was drinking
white
wine.
Or red?
Right.
See, this has got to be our new obsession. I mean, we figured out Mohawk Man. I mean, now what is Cecily Strong's drink of choice?
Oh boy! Wow.
So you also have a rating for the overall show.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go.
Let's figure this out.
On a scale of classic, great, decent, weak, or train wreck, how would you rate this episode, John?
It was classic, great, decent,
weak, or train wreck.
Okay. I am ping-ponging between decent and great. I feel like it started strong, but I don't feel like there was enough really strong material for me to safely say classic or great. So I'm going to go with decent.
Okay.
If you had a good in there between the decent and great, I would go with that. But you do not, so I'm going to go with decent, and I stand by that.
I appreciate you respecting the scale.
Yes, I do. Okay. I do. I've heard you on the show. Yes. Not
you know,
with
I'm
people
no
who
nonsense
do,
with the scale.
Do, yeah,
you don't
absolutely.
Mess with the scale.
Yeah.
You do not mess with
no,
the scale.
No, that's right.
Okay, what do you got, Darren?
I'll give it a decent too. It was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't like a total mess. So I was like, all right, this is decent.
Yeah, it's kind of been the running theme of the back half of the season. Every episode has a few solid sketches, but they're not the most even episodes right now. The back half tends to drag.
So I'm
right there with you. It was a decent episode, but didn't really get to any great heights. So I'll settle on decent too.
Right. Do we want to talk about anything like season overall? Just like quick bottom line. I think we're going to do a season analysis next episode. But
I will put the host hat back to you, and you do it. If there's anything else you want to cover,
I think it was a generally decent season overall. It was interesting. We got to see newer people like Heidi and Melissa and Chris Red and have some great moments.
Yeah, they really shined.
Especially Melissa. She really stepped up.
And Ego, too.
Oh,
it was
absolutely.
Nice to see her get some more play as the season went on, since she was the brand new person.
Right.
And we had a lot of new hosts. That was exciting.
People never hosted for the first time. A lot of energetic hosts, too, I noticed. Like, Sandra Oh was game for everything. Jason Momoa, game for everything. Emma Thompson, just game. Just a lot of energetic hosts who really wanted to be there, who were just like, I'm ready to make this thing go. Yep. Put me wherever. Put me in coach.
Some really inspired bookings, too. Like Liev Schreiber, I would not have expected him to turn out such a
He doesn't do comedy, really.
And they did some nice material. And some surprises in the Steve Carell episode, generally disappointing.
Sometimes it's the one you expect are going to give you a home
you
run.
Think that would be a slam dunk. And
and also, by the same token, the Halsey episode, like, I didn't there even know go. Who she was, and she's like, she totally blew me away, like, with music, and she could do comedy, too. I was like, whoa.
That was one of my season highlights, too. Yeah.
It was a shocker.
But I feel like it contained more pleasant surprises than unpleasant ones.
Sure.
I would say that. So,
okay.
at the very least, decent, if not great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Overall.
Yeah, I don't think SNL has had a genuinely bad season in quite a while. Like, SNL, just the nature of the beast, there's always going to be some stuff you love, some stuff you hate, some stuff that's objectively good or bad, some stuff that just doesn't connect with you. It's always going to be a grab bag.
Yeah.
But the general theme of our show, too, for anyone who's been paying attention, is just that, it's been down the middle. Mm-hmm. But this isn't one for the books. Like season 42, there was something very special about them trying to ride the craziness that no one was anticipating.
Yeah, that's true.
And they got a lot of good material that season.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're kind of mid-election, and the things just seem less fun generally, and, mm-hmm. and I think that that's kind of seeping into the show a bit. And so
yeah, it's getting real.
Yeah, so yeah. they're trying to find, you know, fun goofy stuff that maybe veers more away from that. But week over week, you never know what you're going to get. So every week we get a few gems. Every week we get a few weak ones. But overall, the season I thought was decent too.
So SNL is like a box of chocolates. Never know what you're
going to
get.
You never know what you're
going to get. Oh, thank you, Forrest.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
I was running.
So, well, I guess that's pretty much it for this episode.
Yeah,
but we should do plugs.
Absolutely.
John, you are our guest. Please tell us where our listeners can follow you, and then we'll tell your listeners where they can follow us.
Beautiful.
Plug away.
Yes. So if you are listening on the SNL Nerds feed and you'd like to check out our cast, you can search for SNL Podcast or SNL After Party Podcast in all of the major podcast playing things out there.
Right.
You can also find us on the web at snlpodcast.com or Twitter. All of our social media handles, SNL Podcast.
Yeah, I admire that handle. You snap that one up. That's a great one to have.
Well done.
Yeah, because you know somebody does that Google search. Who's going to be the first hit?
This guy.
This guy right here.
This guy right here. This guy.
Yeah. We had, you know, we tried to get at SNL Nerds on Twitter. Not available.
Some joker took it.
Some lady, I don't even remember her name anymore.
I wouldn't give her the satisfaction of saying her name.
Didn't even tweet once.
Goal!
The audacity of
the audacity.
To lock up that name forever.
I know. But we you can find us on Twitter. We went through that barrier.
Right. It's the SNL Nerd Show, right?
Yes.
It's just at SNL Nerd Show.
Yeah. Right.
There's no V.
Yes.
So at SNL Nerd Show.
Yes. We're like Jonas Brothers.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, I brought it back.
That was throwing us last week on the show. We were like, there's no definite article in front of Jonas Brothers.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, me neither. I was shocked.
And we also have our individual Twitter pages.
Yeah, you can follow me at Darren Credible, Twitter, Instagram, at D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me at Trumbull Comic. I'll spell that since there may be some new people listening to this. It's at TRUMBULL Comic.
So. Yeah.
There we go.
All right. Do you have an individual Twitter page that you want to share with people or no?
Oh, hell no. I would not be on Twitter. If I wasn't promoting
Twitter's
the cast,
terrible.
I would stay away from it.
Yeah. Twitter's terrible. Why would
All
I even
right,
bother?
Don't track down John Murray, people.
No, I do not exist.
He's here,
SNL
a ghost.
Podcast or nothing.
He's a myth. I forget the guy from Usual Suspect there.
Kaiser Sose.
Kaiser Sose. He's Kaiser Sose. There
yep.
it is.
Yep.
That would have been funny if I remembered it.
Yeah, that's okay.
I appreciate it.
That's
it was a good
okay.
try.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. And guys, that's our podcast. Thanks for listening. And I don't know. We'll check you later.
Yeah. We'll be back next week. We'll talk a little about what we're going to do on our show now that the season is over and talk about the season as a whole.
Yes. We're going to give a season wrap up and we'll talk about what we're going to do going forward now that when they're off. This summer and all those things.
John, what are you guys at SNL After Party going to do for the summer?
On our side, we're going to do a postseason extravaganza in the next few weeks.
Nice.
Next week, Mike and Mario are going to have their season wrap-up month in review. So they'll be looking at that month in particular, but also general thoughts on the season. And then Steve and I will be back after that to do our postseason extravaganza. Then we'll do a little bit of SNL Vintage. We'll do a Best of the Rest. We're going to do like the Cut for Time sketches for one show.
Oh, wow. That's a good idea.
Then,
you are so organized. My God, yeah. Man.
we're just flying by the seat of our pants here. We
maybe know what we're going to do next week.
We're hanging on by a thread.
Well, do a Best of the Rest. It's easy content. Just go to YouTube.
Yeah. No, we've got an idea of what we're going to do for the summer, but we'll get into that next week.
Yes.
So tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Uh-huh.
So I just got back from a comic convention, so I got that on the brain. And maybe I'll tell you about that next week.
That'd be great.
But this has been fun.
This has been fantastic.
This has been great. John, did you have fun?
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah.
John, thanks so much for doing it.
You're very welcome.
We got to do this again if we're up your way or you're back down our way.
Yeah, this is a hell of a drive just to come out to podcasts.
Well, I'm not saying I'm saying if you happen to be in the area.
If ever I'm in New York again, I would love to pop over to Jersey and do this again.
That would be great. We'll make that happen.
Hot dog.
So this has been fun. And, please give our best wishes to Steve and Mike and Mario and all the guys at the SNL After Party podcasting world. Oh, and we should give a little plug for our network, the non-productive.com.
Right.
There are a lot of other great shows on the network. Please check those out.
Yeah, we got a Patreon too. Don't give us some money, please.
Mm-hmm. And please, I'm sure John agrees with this. Please find us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast and rate and subscribe.
Yes,
because it helps us out.
Five-star ratings are always welcome.
Oh.
It helps us out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
So. Well, John knows, but
John knows.
But you, the metaphorical listener that I just invented in my head, you don't know. You don't know, man.
Right. You pointed at the mic.
I did. I went all gangster for a second.
It's amazing how quickly these things fall off.
Yep.
This is going downhill so quick.
I listen to your podcast and I'm just like, how do they stay on topic like that?
Editing. Just, there's so much editing.
We're live to tape, baby.
Yeah.
Right. We
raw, uncut.
Yeah.
It's like pure Colombian blow.
No, it's the right way to do it. It's the right way to do it. I gotta figure out how to not have to edit mine so heavily.
Yeah, yeah. That's
a chore.
Yeah, it helps us serve it up fresh. Mm-hmm. So, all right. But this has been fun. So, we're gonna call it a night.
Yes.
Excellent.
Later, thank guys. You.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.